For the last 5 centuries, the Western capitalist system has been subjecting most of the world's people to a permanent crisis of endless war, massive poverty, environmental degradation, and economic instability.
Capitalism has been built through slavery, imperialism, colonialism, and neocolonialism. More than 1 billion people have been killed by capitalism, making it the greatest crime committed against humanity.
Lately, this crisis has moved into the centers of capitalist power, North America and Europe. This documentary is about the destructive record of capitalism and the current disasters it has fomented.
You're listening to Capitalism is the Crisis, a 4-part radio documentary series. I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz. This is Capitalism is Poverty, the 2nd episode in our series. For the next half hour, we focus on India and show how it has been massively impoverished by capitalism.
The international capitalism imposed by Western colonialism over the last 5 centuries has impoverished 80% of humanity, most of whom today live in the global south. Every 6 seconds, a child dies of hunger. At the same time, the capitalist system has greatly enriched the small Western elite and created an extremely unequal world where 80% of the resources are used by 20% of the people, mainly those living in the West. Amongst the cruelest examples of this capitalist-imposed poverty was the genocide of 200 million Indians under British colonial rule as a result of economic deprivation.
This incredible poverty continues today with more than 750 million Indians, about 75% of the country's population, being poor. India is presented by the Western mainstream press as an economic superpower, the poster child of globalization and successful capitalism. But India's move to neoliberal capitalism, which started in 1991, has increased its poverty while enriching a small capitalist elite. The Indian capitalist class, in league with Western multinational corporations and governments, is continuing the plunderous legacy of Western colonialism by looting the country's land and mineral resources to increase its wealth while driving most of the population to destitution.
India has about half the world's hungry people and one-third of the world's malnourished children, the largest number. About half of all children under 5 in the country are malnourished or stunting, and more than 30 million people live in urban slums. 90% of pregnant women aged between 15 and 49 are malnourished and anemic. Just 8 Indian states out of a total of 28 states contain more poor people than exist in the 26 poorest African countries combined. These states are Bihar, Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand, West Bengal, Orissa, Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan, and Uttar Pradesh, which are inhabited by 421 million poor people.
The largest group impoverished by India's rapid move to capitalism is the country's rural population, which makes up 70% of the total, or 770 million people, of whom 400 million are landless. The same pro-capitalist economic reforms that have made India attractive to Western capital and benefited the urban-based middle and upper classes have worsened the economic position of rural Indians, especially farmers. These economic reforms were initiated in 1991 by the Congress Party government of Narasimha Rao, whose finance minister, Manmohan Singh, is the current prime minister.
Under World Trade Organization rules, the reforms lowered tariff barriers, deregulated industry, privatized state enterprises, and encouraged foreign investment. In agriculture, government subsidies were cut for irrigation, fertilizers, and electricity, and credit from state banks was tightened. The prices of agricultural imports rose steeply, and this, combined with the flood of cheap crop imports into Indian markets, bankrupted Indian farmers, driving an astounding 270,940 of them to commit suicide between 1995 and 2011.
Dr. Vandana Shiva is a prolific Indian author and activist and director of India's Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Ecology. She has worked closely with Indian farmers and written extensively about the negative effects on them of India's move to capitalism. Dr. Shiva calls farmer suicides genocide and charges that, quote, "This genocide is a result of deliberate policy imposed by the WTO and implemented by the government. It is designed to destroy small farmers and transform Indian agriculture into large-scale corporate industrial farming," unquote. According to Shiva, the suicides are due to debts that resulted from the rising cost of production and falling prices, both linked to free trade and trade liberalization policies in agriculture. Shiva points out that India's domestic markets have been taken over by multinational corporations such as Cargill, Conagra, Lever, and ITC, and the country's food security is being dismantled.
Now, if you as students had to design a system in which the producer of food was hungry themselves, we would call that design unjust. We would call that design not efficient, because you don't destroy the feeder. I mean, we call our farmers annadata, those who give us food. But the industrial agriculture design takes food away from the producer by many, many mechanisms. One mechanism is that the cost of production is always higher than what the farmers earn. This is why small family farms in Canada have got wiped out. The US have got wiped out, are being wiped out in Europe, everywhere in the world. But in India, this process initially started with the Green Revolution is being accelerated now with globalization, which is bringing a more intensified industrial agriculture. But not only is this design putting farmers into debt, because if your costs of production are higher than what you'll earn, you have to get into debt. You're producing on the basis of credit. And the farmer must sell everything they grow in order to just keep paying back the debt, which is why they go hungry. I've been in villages, abundant, absolutely abundant rice crop, and the farmer can't retain it. Money lenders are breathing down their neck. With genetically engineered seed, this economy of indebtedness has become what I call a suicide economy.
Western multinational corporations such as Monsanto have patented Indian seeds, forcing Indian farmers to buy its expensive seeds with the lie that these will be more lucrative. In fact, they require much more pesticide use and irrigation, thus increasing expenses for farmers and so their bankruptcies and loss of land.
And they go in for it thinking they're going to make it better. And 2 years later, the agents of the seed companies come and say, your land is now our land. That's the day the farmer who got into this trap drinks pesticide to end his life. So what we've done is we've gone into these areas. First, I've done lots of pilgrimages through the suicide belt to just understand the desperation. And of course, we found what they don't have is their biodiversity and their seed anymore.
We asked Dr. Vandana Shiva if she thought capitalism was responsible for the poverty of Indian farmers.
Greed definitely is, and capitalism is organized greed. Global corporate capitalism is very much at the heart of the contemporary threat to the planet.
Rajagopal PV agrees that the widespread poverty in India is due to capitalism. Rajagopal is head of Ekta Parishad, or EP, which translates as Unity Forum. It's a national organization in India and the largest people's movement focused on land reform issues. EP calls for complete land redistribution to end the landlessness experienced by 400 million Indian farmers and enable the marginalized to get out of poverty. EP is a federation of 11,000 community-based organizations working in 10 Indian states. The organization was created in 1991 and in 2007 organized a march of 25,000 people to New Delhi, India's capital, where they demanded and were given land for 1.2 million people by the government.
In October 2012, EP organized a march of 50,000 people from all over India to New Delhi in order to demand comprehensive land reform. The march was called off after the Indian central government came to an agreement with Rajagopal to set up a task force which will draft a national land reform policy within 6 months with the aim of giving land to the landless. The farmers in Ekta Parishad celebrated their victory but vowed to restart their march if the government did not fulfill its pledge. According to the Indian constitution, land reform is a responsibility of Indian states and not that of the central government, and initiatives on it can be blocked at both federal and state levels. The present Congress party-led government is a coalition of 8 parties.
Rajagopal blames both foreign and domestic capitalism for Indian poverty. In the following statement, he refers to Adivasis, which means the indigenous people of India, and to Dalits, which means the untouchables, the group of people most discriminated against in India.
This trend of promoting capitalism at the cost of Adivasis and Dalits and fisher folks and nomads and all these poor people of this country is basically responsible for creating so much poverty and discrimination both. See, poor people make a living by using some of these resources, right? The fisher folks are on water. And if you get all the trawlers to sieve the fish wealth from the sea, there is nothing left for them. Adivasis live in and around forest. So if you convert all the forest into wildlife sanctuaries and national parks and promote tourism, then the Adivasis are out. And they have nothing to depend on. And farmers and other people live on land. And if you have SEZ, special economic zones, and if you are acquiring the land of the farmers, forcing them out and giving them some money, they also get marginalized. So I think this interest of selling all the resources of the country, whether it is water, whether it is mountains, whether it is forest or land, this has created a lot of problem for the poor people. And this is creating greater marginalization, greater poverty. The contradiction is that at the international level we go and commit that we will fight poverty, we will reduce poverty by 2015. That is what you call Millennium Development Goal, reducing poverty or eradicating poverty by 2015. But the actions are just opposite. This is increasing poverty. So in the last 20 years or so, after the arrival of this process called globalization, we have more and more people migrating from the villages to cities. We have a larger number of people committing suicide. We also have a trend called more and more districts being controlled by violent groups. It's almost like private army. So we have created not only poverty, we also have created a huge quantum of violence in this country. And when you have a huge quantum of violence, that is directly affecting the democratic space because people can't operate freely in those regions. So even social movements are finding it very difficult now. So we create poverty, we create violence, we create migration, we create more slums, and we also create problems for democracy. So India is going in that process, and I think this craze for promotion of capitalism is basically responsible.
While capitalism has impoverished 750 million Indians, it has enormously enriched a few capitalist Indian families, such as the Ambanis and the Tatas, thus massively increasing social inequality. Such families often maintain their economic dominance through corruption, state violence, and gangsterism. The top 5% of Indian families hold 38% of total assets. Income inequality has doubled in India since 1991, when pro-capitalist reforms began. India is the worst performing country amongst all emerging economies in the area of income equality. In 2010, India had the third highest number of billionaires in the world after the US and China. The three richest Indians had more wealth than the leading 24 Chinese billionaires.
4 of the top billionaires of the world are now Indian. And I work at the other end of how they became millionaires, because I work with the communities whose land is grabbed, whose the city dwellers, whose water bills or electricity bills jump to 10 times more. These, the few billionaires that have emerged, we never had the scale of billionaires. They now control one third of the Indian economy, which means someone else lost their part of the economy. The Tatas, the Ambanis are using armed might. And I think, you know, everything that happened in Latin America and Central America with the creation of Contras, the arming of society, dividing of society is being tried in India. The new phenomena happening in which I'm getting deeply involved is suddenly a land grab, you know. First they told us land doesn't matter, that's not, you know, that's not real wealth. Wealth is what sits in Wall Street and multiplies itself. And then Wall Street collapsed. And now all the investors are making a beeline for the land of Africa and India because they know that's the real asset. And the millions of acres that are being grabbed can only happen through violence. It can only happen through militarized takeover. And it is leading to violence because the poor who need that piece of land for growing their food, having a livelihood, I'm going to say, take it, I will starve to death, that's fine. To assume that people will give up their last resource, their water, their land, their seed, and not resist. And to assume that 80% of humanity will do that is again a very, very wrong assumption.
The imposition of capitalism on India has led to the eruption of civil war in half the nation. The Indian people are fighting back against their impoverishment, with Maoist revolutionary forces leading armed insurgencies in 14 of the country's 28 states.
Along with massive poverty, inequality, and violence, capitalism has also brought an enormous increase in corruption to India. Corruption is another way of robbing the poor and giving to the rich. The Manmohan Singh Congress Party government in India has been rocked by six major corruption scandals during the last 2 years. Just one of these scandals, involving the government's granting of telecom licenses to companies, has cost the public treasury close to $40 billion. The government is so corrupt that the head of its anti-corruption watchdog agency, P.J. Thomas, was forced to resign by the Supreme Court because he himself faced corruption charges.
This looting of the poor to make rich capitalists, both domestic and foreign, even richer, is exemplified by the creation of special economic zones, or SEZs, in the countryside. SEZs are set up by foreign multinationals or Indian corporations, which, in league with the government, grab the land of Indian farmers, making them landless and poor. SEZs are a major cause of poverty in India. Here again, we hear from Rajagopal PV.
The idea began in China, but in China they only have seven SEZs. But in India, we have hundreds of them. It's basically acquiring large area of land. So all this land is taken in the name of industry in order to create employment. But much of the land gets used for five-star hotels and many other activities, right? So once you acquire the land, it is up to you to decide. And then this SEZs have special possibility because in many cases, they will have their own security. To great extent, it is a small country within a country.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Are they unionized?
No, unionization will be very difficult. I mean, unionization, even if you are not an SEZ, unionization has become very difficult in India because one condition for investment in India is that, see, when we come, we get cheap land. When we come, we get enough electricity. And there should be no trade unions to block our activities. So trade unions have become really, really weak in this country. So they come take land, they privatize the underground water by drawing it, then all the land around will become dry. So they expand their world, and then they push a lot of smoke out, more land get affected, people vacate the land and sell it and go away. So by extracting the water to begin with, by pushing the smoke out into the air, you create your own world.
Because the Indian government is incredibly corrupt, it does nothing to regulate corporations in rural areas or to punish them when they engage in harmful and illegal practices. In this way, the government not only violates its own laws, but has let the corporations turn much of the countryside into an environmental nightmare where no one can live.
Even what you call the pollution control board, you know, a board that is supposed to check how much pollution an industry is creating, and if they are creating too much pollution, to prevent those industries or cancel their permits, that's not happening. If you travel through states of Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand, Odisha, you will see how many of them are polluting the entire area. Everything is black. The housetop will be black, the trees are completely black, the vegetable will be black, the paddy field will be black, everything is black. And you will, even by looking at it, you can say it is completely polluted and people cannot live in that area. But there is a pollution control board in this country. And what are they doing? So that is a problem. You see, if you have an industrialization process in a highly corrupt system, corrupt country, this will go hand in hand. Because corruption will increase, because all these people want to pollute. They all want to extract water and other resources. So like, there are so many cases in India where you lease out some land for mining, but you are leasing on much more land. That means it's illegal. So illegal mining, illegal industrialization, all kinds of illegal things are happening because it's a corrupt country. All over the world, wherever you have corruption, this process cannot be controlled. So, the victims will be ordinary people. And in India, what is happening today is that the poor people are victimized in a big way, whereas some people are making money and all the laws of the land get violated.
Multinational corporations are playing leading roles in the destruction of the Indian countryside and the impoverishment of the country's farmers. The main agent of these companies is the United States government. Here again, we hear from Dr. Vandana Shiva.
In 1988, the U.S. Commerce Secretary, whose name was Carla Hills, flew down to India and said, crowbar by crowbar, we are going to dismantle your economy to make sure investments for our companies are open. Because that's what's called an open economy. Not open for species, not open for society, not open for diversity, open for the invader. Yeah, that's an open market. So I've been doing trainings for farmers for very long, and in one of my trainings I was running through the emerging WTO, the GATT, and I was telling them about Carla Hill's statement in Delhi, and they wanted to know, you know, which is the biggest company that would benefit out of all of this. And I said, Cargill. Your agriculture has changed because of Cargill. And so Cargill brought sunflower seeds. The sunflower seeds failed. And the farmers organized themselves and went and literally carried crowbars and took down every brick of Cargill's seed plant. And in their press release said, if crowbar by crowbar you're going to send your companies here, crowbar by crowbar we're going to send them back.
Dr. Shiva considers capitalism a failed system that its corporations are trying to revive through globalization, especially the system's transfer to India and China.
The big bailout, you know, the model of the exploitation economy had reached its limits in, for example, North America. So only when you relocate aluminium manufacture to a country like India and mine the Nayamgiri Hills, where some of the most ancient tribes live, only then they can do the margins of profits get maintained, because labor here was unionized in the aluminium plants. The full costs of environmental destruction had to be paid. The full energy costs had to be paid. There you just go rape the hills. And all labor costs, everything, nobody is paying the full honest price for it. And in a way, a failed economic model got its resurrection through globalization, which is outsourcing of pollution. That's what I've called it. You know, you take the pollution and say, India, China, you carry this burden. You take work and say, we want to exploit, but our people are too organized. So now we'll exploit you for cheap labor to produce cheap goods so we can be consumers. In the decade in which, you know, India's growth figures keep cited around, I mean, that's another reason why India, China have become so important, is the project has failed. You can't go to Wall Street and say, perfect, it's successful. It's needing a bailout. So what do you say? Oh, India, China are doing fine on this model, so the model can carry on. We are the poster girl of a failed model. So India, in fact, is... you know, I think our land and our people are bearing the brunt right now of keeping that wrong model in place.
You have been listening to Capitalism is Poverty, the second episode of the radio documentary series, Capitalism is the Crisis.
Capitalism is the Crisis is dedicated to the memory of Ho Chi Minh.
This documentary was written by Asad Ismi and produced by Kristen Schwartz. It was written in 2012 and produced in 2013. Go to www.asadismi.ws to download the series.
Theme music at the start of each episode is The Clash, London Calling, and at the end is Pink Floyd, Comfortably Numb. This episode also featured the song Sarfaroshi Ki Tamanna, which means desire for sacrifice, a revolutionary song about Indian independence from capitalism and colonialism. The song was written by Pandit Ram Prasad Bismil and is featured in the Indian film 23rd March 1931, Shaheed.
Many thanks to Chandra Siddhan for conducting the interview with Rajagopal in India for this episode, and to Kevin Shaw for production assistance.
This documentary was funded by Canadian Union of Postal Workers National,
CUPW Local 576, North Bay,
Public Service Alliance of Canada,
Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation,
Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 3903,
Ed Finn,
Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association.
Thank you for listening.